listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the still snowy Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me tonight on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. You may view the guest lineup for this program and relevant links by visiting spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left, and you can choose the month and the day, and see who's going to be on the show and see who has been on the show, since October of 2010. Seems like a long time ago. You may also visit, I hope that you will visit, screeningsandyhook.net, for information about my most recent book. Hang on just a sec. We're having just a little bit of technical difficulty here. And I need to send a message to somebody so that we can get our guest here on the program. Skype sometimes does not work really, really well. But hopefully we'll get it to working. Okay. Anyway, as I was, talking about my newest book. Actually, it was published a little over a year ago. It's published in February of last year. It is titled Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences. It is an expose on big pharma, big government, and the very complicit media. The book exposes the incredibly sinister details of something far more significant than some kind of a supposed government psyop to seize your guns. I hope that you will also visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net, created by one of our wonderful listeners, who I appreciate so, so very much. One may listen to the audio files of my programs at that site, SpingolaSpeaks.net, and make comments. And, of course, one may also listen to the archives at RBN. And certainly, if you appreciate RBN, we hope that you will consider donating to the network, and you can do that by calling 800-724-2719 at extension 1. Another option is Wooly's blog, and Wooly is spelled W-H-O-O-L-I-S, and that is wooliesblog.blogspot.com. You may email questions or comments to comment@spingola.com, and we hope that you will join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest tonight, and I'm so delighted to have him back, is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He is also the producer of Fluoride Gate, an American Tragedy. And the website is fluoridegate.org. And he does have a Facebook page, and that is /david.kennedy.77771. Dr. Kennedy, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Yes, happy to be here.
Oh, it's always a delight to talk to you. We haven't talked for a while. And I thought, oh my gosh, we've got to have him back. He's got so much great information. And there's always something new to report. And, anyway, fluoride's bad.
Things are happening. You're absolutely correct. There's a whole lot going on in the world today, and the Canadians, the good news is the Canadians are getting the upper hand on the fluoridation program, and one at a time they're plucking it out of the water supplies of Canada, and they are doing a great job. They were so concerned that Calgary, one of the largest cities in the Alberta province, took it out in 2011. They put together a paper that is so obviously, in my opinion, scientific fraud that the authors should be summarily kicked out of the public health department. But that's where they work, huh? They got a government job. And so they, 11 times in the one article, she put down that there's unpublished data. But if you look at the published data, it did not show what the article was claiming, whether tooth decay went up. Actually, permanent tooth decay went down. Most of the increase was in before they took the fluoride out. It actually, you know, so it's just phony. They just make stuff up to scare people. And, oh, be afraid, your child might get a cavity. Average kid in Canada is one cavity per kid in the whole country of Canada. So do we really need, you know, wild and crazy additions of silica fluoride, arsenic, lead, cadmium to the water supply because you might get two, and it doesn't really affect tooth decay. If anything, it makes it worse. So it's just a phony program. And that, but they're beginning to peel back the layers of protection in Canada. I guess small democracies seem to fare better than big democracies. I'm glad to say the Canadians are faring fairly well.
And why is it that there are several European countries that have followed the same thing that Canada has done by taking out the fluoride in the water? Why is it that Americans and American politicians are so stubborn? What is it with Americans?
Money. I said there's 11 reasons. Money.
Yeah.
It really is money. And the small democracies, Denmark, the king banned it by royal decree. Europe is all divided up into a bunch of little, you know, potentates. But they all had their reasons that were, in many cases, different. You know, Sweden said it would be unethical because you wouldn't have the ability to see and diagnose the need for and inform people of the risks of consuming it. Other countries said, well, you know, we'll make it optional. You can buy salt with fluoride, or you can buy toothpaste with fluoride if you want it. So they believe in freedom of choice. Apparently we don't. But the whole thing, the engine that's driving this whole thing are companies like Cargill, the largest privately owned corporation on the planet, and that the lie is so old that other countries like China and Japan and Mexico have got into the deal, and they're selling us raw untreated hazardous waste from the pollution scrubber systems of the phosphate fertilizer mines. And they put that in the water and say it's good for kids. Well, no, it's not. It's not even good for rats. You could put the same stuff in the water for rats, and they get dental fluorosis, and they get neurological impairment, and they get increased blood levels of lead, just like humans. So, you know, what do we get from the advocates? Oh, you can't prove that. Well, actually, they did prove that. When you got rats in a cage, and one rat has to drink silica fluoride-treated rat water, and the other rat gets to drink pure water, and then the rat with the silica fluoride-treated water has a dramatic increase in the blood level of lead, you have basically done what's called a scientific proof. You established this product, and it's been done at least twice, and you know you can do it twice in rats and with 450,000 children in the human study. So, you know, what do you want for a proof? You know, it's a lot more proof that silica fluoride is bad for you than putting fluoride reduces tooth decay. The York Review went through all of the studies, and they couldn't find any modern study that was valid by today's standards that showed any benefit whatsoever. And so they said, well, You know, there were some studies back in the 40s and 50s that did show benefits, so there probably is one, but, you know, with today's exposure to fluoride from toothpaste and mouthwash, that we don't see it anymore. I think they're making it up. The people that did the original studies, if you go through them, there's a wonderful book by Philip R.N. Sutton, that a statistician and a dentist from Australia. He's passed away now, but he took every single study that they claimed showed a benefit, and took it apart, got the actual study, read it, and understood it, and reworked the statistics. And some studies, quote, end quote, were as little as one tooth.
Wow.
So now
you said something about the rats having lead. If they were drinking the fluoridated water, that they had lead.
Lead.
Can you relate that to the situation in Flint, Michigan?
Yeah, Flint, Michigan. The turkeys got cheap. And the running the water supply. Oh, we can't afford to buy these people this high dollar water. So they went from a Lake Huron over to the toxic soup of a river. And then they got even cheaper and they said, well, we still got to add this hydrofluorosilicic acid, raw untreated hazardous waste to the water supply. But boy, that base that's neutralizing that acid, that's kind of expensive. So let's save on that. Let's not buy the Drano to neutralize the acid. So sure, the water was acid. But it also carried a chelator. Silico fluoride has got a patent in the U.S. Patent Office to extract lead from brass. Have you ever turned on a price fitter water faucet? Did you ever turn it upside down and look at it? It's made out of brass. So if you've got lead solder, if your house was built before 1978, I think, the solder that soldered the copper pipes together was 50-50 lead and silver. So the silicon fluoride leaks the lead out of that. It's not lead water pipes. It's lead solder on copper water pipes. And so the silicon fluoride attracts lead. It's actually very attractive to lead. And so it basically solubilizes the lead that's in the water pipes and faucets and soldered joints that were soldered before the band, and there's still people using the stuff. You can still buy it at Home Depot, so, you know, help us from that. But anyway, it dramatically increases blood levels of lead, and there's subsets of the population that are extremely prone to accumulating lead, and they're, basically it has to do with calcium absorption. If you never, ever, ever we're exposed to lead, it makes absolutely no difference that you're predisposed to absorb lead because you're not exposed to it. People who have dark skin do not get as much vitamin D from the sunshine as the pasty pale people that live up in Norway and Sweden. And so our skin, thin white skin, sun hits it and it turns your cholesterol from cholesterol to vitamin D. Vitamin D is essential for having strong bones and teeth. And that's a good thing. If you have darker skin, the sun doesn't penetrate as deep, so you don't get as much vitamin D. So their intestines are simply adapted to the fact they're not going to have as much vitamin D, so they're better at pulling calcium from food. So if you eat a carrot, there's a lot of calcium in carrots. And so their intestines absorb the calcium. The bad news is lead looks like calcium. And so their intestine would be more prone to pick up lead. But add silico fluoride to that, and it causes a six-fold increase in blood level of lead in African-American and a four-fold increase in the blood level of lead in Hispanic children. And I think it's unconscionable that we would allow that product to be added to the water supply of a diverse community, our nation. It doubles the blood level of lead in the Caucasian population. So let's look at the informed consent. When you give a drug as a doctor, you have to give informed consent. And you also have to examine the patient. So who examined the children in Flint? Nobody. Who gave them informed consent? Nobody. So it is an ethical violation, and that was one of the statements that Nobel laureate made. It said that fluoridation turns medical science on its head because it ignores all the tenets that we have adopted as being ethical. You know, informed consent, examine the patient, use a drug that works, actually proven safe and effective. This last month, and the Food and Drug Administration shut down the sales and distribution of fluoride vitamins and tablets from a big company in Nevada, and that they probably should have gone all over the United States, but they're just like the highway patrol. They just catch one person, drag him out beside the car, and make him walk up and down and touch their nose, et cetera, et cetera. All the rest, you can guarantee all the rest of the pharmaceutical companies selling fluoride drops and tablets and vitamins have got the word. The FDA is not going to put up with that anymore. They wrote a real strong letter that said that you're selling an unapproved drug. There's no evidence of benefit. There's no evidence of safety, and you're not following our guidelines, even in your recommendations. They had recommended, using 6 months, and the FDA didn't recommend any fluoride exposure until, I think, 3 years or something like that. And so how's that work out if you put it in the water? When you're born, you say, oh, you can't have any of that water for 3 years. You're going to get pretty thirsty, but tough luck.
Wow. Now, didn't the officials in Flint offer some of the car manufacturers a special deal on water? Because the water that was, fluoridated and kind of messed up, was wreaking havoc with their cars. Their cars were corroding. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, but it will corrode the fluoride. They were talking about the corroded pipes. The fluoride corrodes pipes. That's what it does. It accelerates the aging of the water system. And, there's a book called Fluoride, the Aging Factor, and it accelerates the aging of humans. So, it's a terrible substance that it's the strongest electronegative element in the whole periodic chart. And so it'll strip an electron off of the inert gases, if you like. But the thing that is extremely dangerous about the fluoride is it's not just about the fluoride. It's the fact that we're totally overexposed from air pollution, from water fluoridation. That water fluoridation ends up with the fluoride in every product that's made with that, from breakfast cereals to beverages. And so there's no reason to swallow any of that. It's all bad for you. And so, it's just a phony baloney program that the dentists have fallen in love with, because when you go to dental school, if it's accredited, they have to get their approval for the curriculum from the American Dental Association. You go look at the money that's going into the American Dental Association, and it's coming into the ADA from industry. They donate to their nonprofits, and then the ADA uses their members to go out and say, rah, rah, this is really good. But ask them some simple questions. What dose of fluoride do you recommend for an infant? And they'll go, boo, 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 dose. Why are we talking about dose? We know that concentration in the water is wonderful. Well, if you calculate the dose of fluoride to an infant that's on a fluoridated tap water formula, mm-hmm. it's 175 times more than a woman's breast milk. So, Who's right? Do you think God was right, or do you think maybe the dentists are wrong?
Wow.
175 times more than what comes out in a naturally produced beverage for the baby.
Wow. This is, and of course this is true throughout the industry. You said that it's in a lot of the manufactured products, that's breakfast cereal, and it's also in a lot of prescription drugs, correct?
That's correct. Cipro, the chemotherapy drug, it was called 5-FOOT-UNDER, 5-fluorouracil. It makes DNA that blows up so you can no longer produce any new cells.
Oh, my gosh, really?
It's chemo. Fluoride, people don't understand. Fluoride is not a nutrient. It is a poison. It falls into the same category as lead. Is it like your body doesn't have any use for lead? Once you put lead in the body, it basically goes around and destroys various systems, and that it has no beneficial effect whatsoever. The same is true of fluoride. The only way they can show fluoride has a benefit is that if you put high levels in the plaque on the teeth, and it makes the germs that are living there sick. Well, you know, you can get a toothbrush or a toothpick or your shirt tail and knock the scum off your teeth.
Right.
And then wherever you knock the scum off, the scum can't make a hole in your tooth by rotting it, by producing acid.
Right.
So poisoning the little germ is not the way to do that. Or if you want to poison the germ, you should kill it with baking soda or salt or even iodine. Iodine's a nutrient, and it's the antidote to fluoride poisoning, among other things. So iodine's, what do we get? 17% of the population in the United States have thyroid problems. What happens if you take fluoride into your system through toothpaste or dental fillings? The dentists now are putting fillings in that leak fluoride and not telling the patient.
Oh,
they're
really?
They're putting varnish on children's teeth in schools and having it done by the janitor and not telling the mothers. You know, it's just, they are so arrogant. They think they know more than anybody else on the planet, like the rest of the country, the world's countries. And so, you know, but that's the reason for that arrogance goes back to the American Dollar Association, ADA. They accredit the schools, and then the schools teach the dogma from 60 years ago. And they haven't changed what they were saying yet. When I went to school, I was told that it made the enamel harder. When we actually test enamel, which is one of the things that a scientist would do, the enamel is actually softer. So, that was incorrect. They also said it makes it more resistant to acid dissolution. When you put it in the acid and try to dissolve it, it dissolves just as well with fluoride in it as without any fluoride in it. So that was not correct either. So what we learn in school is the fairy tales of dentistry. And then it's only later when you start reading the scientific literature and taking these things apart, element by element by element, that you come up with the understanding that basically you paid for a decent education, and what you got was not education, but indoctrination. You're fed full of dogma and not given the tools you need to separate out the dogma from fact. But, you know,
well,
that's why we go to school.
A lot of dentists won't acquiesce to, well, they're not going to do any additional study. They're going to just go along with what they learned. They've probably borrowed money to go to dental school. They need to pay it back. They need to have a practice. Is there a standard of care in dentistry that you can, if you go against the grain, if you go against what you have been taught in dental school, that you will get in trouble?
Uh-huh. Because some states like Oklahoma say the standard of care is whatever the ADA says. Well, that's not the correct definition of standard of care, by the way. Standard of care is what everyone else is doing. And if you wanted to follow a different drummer, theoretically, you can do your own research and follow, like the International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology, which is an organization that I strongly support. We rely upon science to come up with our guidelines, and we've eliminated both mercury and fluoride as elements that members are they're not supposed to use those. And so how did we arrive at that? We did a risk assessment. This is the normal way that all the scientists in the world function. You look and you see how much causes a problem, and then you say, okay, because X caused a problem, so you need to have no more than 10% X, you know, in your diet or food or fillings or whatever. And because infants are particularly vulnerable to a lot of things, you might put another zero in there and say 1/100th of X. So we know that X causes some sort of problem like thyroid suppression or neurological impairment or whatever. And so a risk assessment would identify that and then try to protect the more vulnerable in society. You know, people who are, like drink a lot of water. What if
sure.
You're a runner and you like to go out and run? You know, I used to run 3 miles a day at lunch. You know, of course, means you're kind of thirsty.
Sure.
So you come in and chug down a couple of liters of water and then maybe another one in the afternoon. So, you know, people don't drink 1 liter of water a day. That's what it's based on. 1 liter of water a day. Well, you know, 1 liter of water, but that also means 1 liter of beer or, you know, 1 liter of
coffee or Coke or whatever else you're doing.
1 liter of Snapple. Oh, some Snapples, the tea stuff is out through the ceiling. Lipton instant iced tea, anything has instant on it. So if you make up iced tea with the fluoridated tap water, you get levels that will cripple you. That actually happened in Kansas City not too long ago. But, you know, kudos to her doctors. They figured out why she was bent over and her back hurt. Well,
oh my gosh.
What's that got to do with it? Lower lumbar pain is a symptom of a fluoride overdose. Well, how many people do you know whose lower lumbar, sacroiliac, like where your hip and your spine rotate, hurts? Well, when I filmed a documentary in China, a lady that is chatting up our guides, and she's extremely grateful that they came to her village 20 years ago and got the fluoride out of the water supply because the pain in her back went away. She can't stand up. She's walking around looking straight at the ground. If she wants to look at somebody, she backs up to a boulder and leans back so she can look forward. Otherwise, she's bent over. Her back is bent at 90 degrees. She cannot stand up. That's what happens in the extreme case. The water used to be 4 parts per million in that village back in 1980 when they fixed it. And then when my wife and I toured that place in 2000, I measured the water. It was like 0.2. And she recognized all these people because they were the people that had been there in 80 and fixed the water supply. And so she was saying, oh, thank you. The pain is so much better. I can walk now.
Heart.
I can get off the bed. She was paralyzed. It actually bent her so bad that she could not get off the bed. And in the United States today, water supplies in the United States, some of them exceed 4 parts per million, and that there's a well up in Monterey, California, and the public health department kept measuring, yeah, it was 4, 7, 9, yada, 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 and they never told anybody. You know, why are we measuring this stuff if you guys keep quiet about it?
Well, a lot of people, as you say, in the United States suffer from lower back pain, and many of them get surgeries for that. And there's no indication that they really need surgery, but they do it because doctors have agreed to do a surgery, I guess.
Well, you know, there are indications for surgery, and what happens is that the fluoride destroys the discs and ligaments inside the capsule, and so the back begins to collapse, and so now the bones are resting against the nerves, and so you know, if I just take a little finger and put my finger on your nerve, you go ah, you know, I'm terrible pain, and so what they end up doing is they end up creating like a railroad track up the back with, you know, titanium screws both front and back, and they bolt them together and they keep those nerves off of the pain. It'll make the pain go away if you don't die and don't get paralyzed. And I know a guy that is blessed to have had that kind of surgery because he was totally in pain. But on the other hand, why should we be accelerating that deterioration in our society? Yeah, you know, sir, for $30,000 we can make it go away for a while with, you know, enormous amounts of titanium and surgery. But on the other hand, if your policy is causing it, what does it cost to change policy? It doesn't
exactly
cost a penny.
Wow. Alrighty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Our guest tonight is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He is also the producer of Fluoride Gate, an American Tragedy. And the website is fluoridegate.org. And his Facebook page is slash david.kennedy.77771. Earlier, you were talking about iodine and the thyroid problems and how fluoride actually causes them, and that that iodine would be a countermeasure against that.
Yes. Well, the people don't realize that fluoride has been used as a drug to kill a thyroid for, 80 years. And that, sometimes the thyroid will get overactive. And what they did is they gave people a tablet or two of fluoride, and it killed it. Because fluoride is a halogen. It looks similar to iodine, and it displaces it, both in the thyroid and in the cells. And then whatever function the iodine was doing, which is essential for human life, that fluoride blocked. And so it blocks the normal functioning of the cell. It blocks normal functioning of the thyroid. And so if you consume fluoride as a drug back in the 30s and 40s to kill your thyroid died. Now we put it in the water, so everybody's thyroid is a little bit dead. And people don't realize that, but it lowers the IQ in children. It causes an increased risk of infections, your flus, your colds, and all that stuff, if your thyroid is not working. Thyroid is the master controller of the body. It's the one that keeps your body temperature up. So if you got cold hands and feet, then, your temperature's not right. Your body's not burning the fuel that you're giving it. So you end up with this big donut around your middle, and you have, you fat in your arteries and fat in your waist and on back your legs. So it's insane to put a drug in the water supply. How are you going to control who takes that drug? And, it's just wonderful, everybody should take it. No, that's not true. You show me the drug that everybody should take, and it's air and water. Other than that, no.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Now, there have been some lawsuits that you were talking about on your Facebook page. One that had to do with dental nurses in Norway. Could you talk a little bit about that and what happened? And
this is dentistry, other dirty little secret, and that again, the problem is the American Dental Association, because what they do is they teach dentists. First off, the problem is the school. Is that if you went to school and the teachers were all walking around with respirators and hazmat suits on,
mm-hmm.
you'd want to stand outside the school and you'd say,
"Sure,
what's going on here?" Well, the levels of mercury are so high in every dental school, dental assisting school, and dental hygienist school, when they mix, pack, carve, or polish dental amalgam, that by OSHA law, that you have to be in a spacesuit. Well, that would embarrass the instructors. It would embarrass the school. So they just ignore it. And they have children in there in their shirt sleeves with hazardous waste exposure all through their education. You cannot get out of dental school or dental assisting school and not have a significant exposure to mercury. And then you get out into your practice and you act just as stupid about mercury exposure as you did your school did. I sent a letter, it's called Actual Notice, to every dental school, dental hygiene school, and dental assisting school. People say, how many is that? Well, there's 50 dental schools in North America. That's Canada and the United States.
Oh, wow.
And there's 600 dental assisting schools that we were able to identify. So, we've got 18-year-old girls mixing, packing, carving, and polishing, and handling mercury in their shirt sleeves. You can't do that. You've got to have a mercury-proof glove, a nitrile glove. You've got to have a respirator. You've got to have your skin protected, yada, yada, yada. And they don't. And I had a long, involved series of letters. I wrote over a period of 16 years between myself, UCLA, and the California Department of Occupational Health and Safety. And what it boiled down to is I am absolutely correct that the students are protected by the standards of the environment. In other words, the environmental protection standard. And that means that the air cannot be above 0.3 parts per million. UCLA measured over 100 in one incident where the student was grinding on the filling. And then what did they do? They blamed the student.
Oh, my gosh.
And I So I asked OSHA. I said, do they have to send you notice when they violate called the permissible exposure limit, never to be exceeded under any circumstances? And they said, no, they don't have to tell us, but they have to tell all employees that were present, not the student. The student's not protected by OSHA. He's not, or she's not an employee. OSHA is to protect the person that was measuring. That's an employee. The dental assistant that was assisting. That's an employee. The instructor that was present. That's an employee. They have to write a letter, a formal letter to everybody that was present and explain how they will never, ever, ever let this happen again. And so the plan, the business plan, to not let an exceedance of the permissible exposure limit to occur. I'm going to hit them with the Freedom of Information Act one of these days and ask them for all the letters they've written, and I will get zero, but it's just me stirring the pot. I mentioned earlier, to finish up on Norway, that it went all the way to the Norway Supreme Court, and the tortoise is the first dental assistant, but there's 450 of them lined up after her, was paid for her on-the-job injury. She's neurologically impaired, and that was tested and determined and proven by the Lund University in Sweden. The dental assistants didn't trust Norway to do the tests, so the University of Lund has been doing experiments on monkeys and primates on mercury for years, and so they said, well, here's a primate, a dental assistant. So they had 450 dental assistants responding to a TV program. How come we don't have such TV programs here? Oh, I guess we just ignore it. And so they responded, and they put them all into a study, and 420 of them were mercury poisoned, many of them severe. In Tortoise's job, the two ladies died on the job. I mean, where do you work? A 35-year-old woman will just up and die. And what were they doing? They were sterilizing instruments. And if you take instruments, scrub the gook off, throw them in a heated thing, that when you open the door, you get a huge blast of mercury in that it killed them, killed two of them. And that's just one office. That's just one office. It's just incredibly stupid how the dentists behave around science. They don't pay any attention whatsoever to the evidence that's produced by scientists. They stick with dogma. Oh, I've been doing this for now 20 years, and other than this little tick I have, and I can't remember anything, it doesn't bother me. It's a real shame. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that a letter went out to a pharmaceutical company, and I couldn't pull the name out of my gray matter because I too was a dentist for many years, and now I have found the letter. It's Kirkman Laboratories. And it was mailed out, overnight delivery, signature required, on the 13th of January this year. And what it says, the United States Food and Drug Administration conducted an inspection of your drug manufacturing located in Oregon, actually, but the head office is in Nevada, and last summer, June. And this inspection revealed that your firm is marketing unapproved drugs. Kirkman Laboratories, fluoride drops. Kirkman Laboratories, cherry dye-free fluoride, sodium fluoride tablets, and Kirkman's cherry dye-free sodium fluoride tablets in violation of the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, and in addition has determined that these products are misbranded drugs in violation of another section of blah, blah, blah. And see below, and it says, stop it immediately. Based on the information collected from this, you're a manufacturer and distribute unapproved new drugs in violation of this section. So, fluoride, if any doctor or physician or dentist is prescribing fluoride drops and tablets for you or your child, call a lawyer. It's against the law.
Really?
Who else is doing that? That would be our water supplier. So
sure.
Our water suppliers think they're doctors.
Wow. Well, I know that there are dentists locally that are still giving fluoride treatments to their patients.
Fluoride treatment's different. It on the other hand, it doesn't work. Fluoride treatment is no better than brushing with a fluoridated toothpaste, and if you wanted to really stop tooth decay, you would use something like iodine, or you can actually measure the bugs that cause tooth decay. They're called Streptococcus mutans. And there's a very simple test. Every kindergarten should have the kids come into the school and spit in a tube. And then cook it for, you know, at body temperature for 48 hours. And the tubes that turn color are the ones that the kids are at high risk of tooth decay. Why don't we do that? And you'll find that about one out of five kids will turn the tube dark, and then you have to, you know, say, oh, gee, we probably need to talk to your mom about, you know, what you're eating. And, you know, they pull a sucker out of their mouth or whatever. And so, you know, that's very easy. Tooth decay is an infection. Think of it differently. It's not something wrong with the child. It's not something wrong with the water. It's what you're eating. And that would be bad for the sale of sugar products. And, you know, if you go to the breakfast cereal aisle, you'll see sugar frosted flakes and or sugar this and sugar that, sugar this and sugar that, because kids love sugar, especially when mom gives it to them all the time as a reward. So sure. You're basically training that child to see sugar as a reward. And then when they get older, they reward themselves. Oh, they had a bad day at the office. I'm going to stop and get myself a cafe chocolate macchiato or something like that with, you know, 4 tablespoons of sugar in it. So sugar is what causes tooth decay. You can go to, don't take my word for it, go to any museum and look at somebody that's 5,000 or older, and you can look at North Americans, you can look at Egyptians, you can look at, well, there were some cavities in the really wealthy people in Egypt, but that's because they were really wealthy and they had access to gobs of sweet stuff. Hippocrates, the physician 2,000 years ago, wrote that women who eat too many figs will have the toothache. And I don't know why he said women, but, you know, I guess women were the only ones that got to eat figs or something, but the ordinary diet of the ancient people didn't cause tooth decay. It wasn't until we learned to grow grain and then we have large amounts of carbohydrate that tooth decay began to be a problem. So if you go back far enough, like North American Indians, they were basically meatitarians in the far north, you know, because, you know, like Eskimos, what are they going to eat? You know, does the tomatoes grow this winter? I don't think so. So they're eating walruses and seals and whale and that sort of stuff. So they got a meat diet. They had zero tooth decay, none. So we know what causes cavities. But what we don't want to do is we don't want to tell the people that, because that would be bad for sales. Or we just wag our finger at them and say, oh, you're eating too much sugar. But why does the Food and Drug Administration allow a damaging product to be in food? You know, the FDA was charged in 1938 with making sure that the food supply was safe. Well, if the food supply causes a disease such as diabetes or tooth decay, would you call it safe? Well, you could probably handle that with a label. It says, by the way, eating this on a regular basis may cause your teeth to rot out of your head and your pancreas to die.
Right.
Buy it at your own risk. I'm kind of a freedom of choice kind of guy. But on the other hand, we don't have that label on the food. We have a phony baloney label on it that lists, look at your water bottle, it lists how much fat there is in the water. No, I don't want to know how much fat there is in the water. I want to know how much fluoride there is in the water.
Sure.
And if you go to Mexico, you know, Mexico, that high-tech country, you know, if you go to Mexico, you can pull a bottle of water off any shelf in any little bodega in anywhere in Mexico and read on it. It tells you how much fluoride, magnesium, calcium, sodium there is in that water. What if you got high blood pressure? You'd like to know how much sodium is in your water, right? And
sure.
So we have a label that tells us about fat and sugar and carbohydrate on water. We got a food label on water. Why did they do that? They did that because the water companies don't want to tell you what's in the water. So we would just put a label on there that has all kinds of information that is meaningless. Show me a bottle of water that has anything besides zero in those categories, protein, fat, and carbohydrate.
Right.
It's all zero. Yeah. So we got to, you know, it's really easy to make that label because it's always the same, 0, 0, 0. But
sure.
Show me the mineral content and it's not going to be zero. We've measured 20 different water supplies and it's all over the map. And some of them are actually above the level that you can legally sell. Here in California, we have a 2 part per million maximum contaminant level. And in the United States, they're supposed to warn you if it's above 2. But you can buy bottled water. There was a lady that got Vichy water. She thought that was a health food water. It was highly touted mineral water from Vichy, France, and she got crippled. There were 6 parts per million fluoride in that water. So, you know, I know Bernie Sanders says we're going to correct everything if they put it in the government in charge. The government's already in charge of this. They're in charge of the water supply in Flint. They're in charge of the labels on the water bottle. They're in charge of the bottled water for sales in the United States. That's the Food and Drug Administration, and they're not doing their job. This letter to Kirkman Laboratories is dated January of this year. I can dig up a letter from 1975 that said the same darn thing.
Really? So they knew back then.
Well, but think about it. We could have saved so much money because we don't need any of the employees in the dental division of the Food and Drug Administration from 1975 till now because they just woke up this last week and started doing what they should have done in 1975. There are people alive today that weren't alive in 75. And probably some of the people that wrote that thing in 75 have got old and gray and passed away. Why does it take 35 years to get something minimum done?
Right.
This is a darn letter. What's it cost to send a letter? You know,
now,
overnight probably cost them $10, $20. So.
Would you say or surmise that fluoride and mercury is causing all the Alzheimer's that we see?
I don't think the fluoride would aggravate Alzheimer's. The mercury, I believe, is the proximate cause of Alzheimer's. And the reason I say that, and I'm not making this up, is that there's about 10 different reasons why mercury is implicated in the causation, and I'm using that word cautiously, but deliberately, causation of Alzheimer's. We can create it in animals by making them inhale mercury.
Wow. Okay. We do have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest tonight is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He is the producer of Fluoride Gate, an American tragedy, and the website is fluoridegate.org. His Facebook page is /David.Kennedy.77771. Now you mentioned that mercury causes Alzheimer's, and that could be via a flu shot or whatever vaccines may have mercury in them, and also statin drugs could also cause Alzheimer's. Is that correct?
Statin drugs are going to knock your coenzyme Q out, so you're going to get sick. But Alzheimer's is, I believe, a direct result of mercury interacting with the neuron. The nerve is sitting there with a little arm sticking out that may go to your foot, you know, from the brain or whatever. And it's covered with an insulation called tubulin. And that the tubulin is bound to protect that neuron, neurofiber. And mercury makes that fall off. There's a YouTube video published in the scientific literature as part of a study that we paid for, Saeed. And it's called How Mercury Causes Neurodegeneration. And you can watch under a microscope when you put in minute amounts of mercury, and I think it says in the video that the 10 to the minus 6th mercury was used, and you have higher than that in your brain if you got mercury in the cerebral spinal fluid of your brain if you got mercury fillings in your teeth. And what it caused these nerves to do is to slough off. And you're absolutely correct that the flu vaccine still contains large amounts of mercury. And what they did is they did a study on people with Alzheimer's and so forth. And if you had your flu shot, 7 sequential flu shots in the prior decade, you increased your chances of having Alzheimer's disease. I'd have to dig it out. I think it was 4-fold. And but, you know, how insane to give people a regular shot of mercury. I mean, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, you'll excrete it. Oh, yeah, you've got some studies on excretion then. And when you actually look at excretion, some of it comes out, and some of it stays there for the rest of your life. It just, you know, it gets stuck in the brain. It gets charged and ends up in the brain where it continually strips tubulin off the neurons. And so we actually were able to create all of the hallmark diagnostic signs of Alzheimer's disease, all of them, the seven of them, neurofibrillary tangles, tau, damaged keratophosphokinase, and, you know, I'm speaking Greek here, but there are only so many pieces of evidence you need to convict the murderer of, you know, being a bad person. And,
sure.
The, you know, if you got their DNA on the knife that's sticking in the person and, you know, and the video of them going in with a knife and
sure.
So forth, it's not controversial. They did it. So,
right.
Mercury did it. And that's, and other things are neurotoxins like fluoride, you were mentioning, and anything that's a neurotoxin, if you've got a compromised brain and then you're consuming a neurotoxin, whether it's the funny artificial sweeteners or the pesticides or the herbicides, you know, like glyphosate, that all of that's neurotoxin. So when you have, you know, you knock it down a little bit and then you make it worse by exposing yourself to a neurotoxin.
Wow. All righty, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back in 3 minutes, and we will take your calls. In fact, we have somebody already in the line. So we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry, the website. He's also the producer of Fluoride Gate, An American Tragedy. The website is fluoridegate.org. His Facebook page is /david.kennedy.77771. And we do have some callers lining up. If you have questions or comments, you may call into the program at 800-313-9443. And some notes that we took earlier, or that I jotted down. I have like 4 pages of notes from previous programs that we've done. And one of the things that you said on a previous program was that there were some people in Chicago who were receiving, they were receiving, what were they receiving? They were dialysis, and the people were using tap water, and it killed several people in the Chicago area.
It happens, and that this is absolutely well established in the medical literature, is that you have to use pure water when you do kidney dialysis. If you don't, then the elements in tap water, especially fluoride, will harm the person on the dialysis treatment. And somebody got cheap, and instead of using pure water, they decided, we'll just use this tap water and so forth, and the people perished. What's interesting about that is, then in 2006, the National Research Council identified very specifically people who have diminished kidney function, or people who have no functional kidneys at all, who've had nephrectomies, are at a special risk of fluoride in their systems, because even with dialysis, fluoride is the problem in getting that stuff out. Because fluoride is hard to get out of your body, and if you don't, it accumulates to higher levels. And that's, I mean, we were talking about the people bent over with the pain in the back and all that.
Sure.
People on kidney dialysis, they're not happy. Yes, it's a lot better than not, but it's certainly not, as good as your own kidney.
Sure.
So anyway,
sure.
It's just insane that we allow industry to put their waste, and this really is from the pollution scrubber systems of the phosphate fertilizer mines.
Oh, look at, my gosh.
What kind of person, what kind of country puts mine tailing waste and pollution scrubber waste in the water supply? Well, that would be ours.
Right. All righty. My goodness. Let's take a phone call. Let's take Jerry in Chicago. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Deanna and the good doctor. I've seen that movie, Fluoride Gate. Let me ask you a question. 3 years ago, this coming August, were you in, I think it was Schaumburg for the health symposium?
Oh, in Chicago, yeah.
Oh, okay, then I sat there for your lecture. This was kind of after hours on Friday night, I believe.
Well, I showed Fluoride Gate. We had a, they were real nice. They had a movie night. You know, what I like to do is, you know, have a movie night and then answer questions and that sort of stuff. So we had a movie night. One of the ways we got, I took Fluoride Gate to two dozen different venues and, you know, it got all over the place with it. So anyway, I think I look at it like dropping a little bit of truth into the big pudding pie of, you know, lies and promotion and all that stuff. But the truth isn't going to go away. And eventually it will, you know, be able to break the engine of fluoride promotion, because if you learn the questions to ask, what dose is safe for a baby, the correct answer is none. And so, you know, I managed to get the highest paid fluoride promoter here in California by getting Scott Peters, now a congressman, to ask the question, what is it about this baby being overdosed? And it's one of my YouTube videos. It says, how a fluoridation advocate admits poisoning babies. And what's the guy dance around? Baby should be breastfed. And finally he says, if you're going to make up the fluoride water, use distilled water. And Scott about choked on his words until he said, oh, distilled, huh? Then voted to put it in our water in San Diego, even though we have a law against it.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, let me ask you another question. Do you know a Dr. Diane Meyer?
I don't believe I do. Oh,
okay.
Diane. I know Diane, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Deanna, she has a practice not too far from you. I believe it's in Naperville.
Oh, really?
And she has... She's given seminars there before, apparently, at that health symposium, and John B. Wells had her on his show for 2.5 hours a couple months ago, and I know her very well. She's a good friend, but yeah, you ought to try getting her on your show sometime and listen to about all the good doctor talked about in the first hour about the mercury poison that she tried to get out of her system, and she inhaled all of this during her years of training in the dental field.
Of course, yes.
She's got a real good, took her almost 20 years to detox this out of her body, and now she does, she takes those all terrible mercury fillings out, through a procedure, and she puts the right ones in people's mouth, and she is in a big lot of hot water with the American Dental Association and everything else like that. I think you'd have, fun with her.
Indeed.
I could hook you up sometime with an email or something if you want. And
that'd be great.
She's not only that, she's into the truth movement and the 9/11 and the sovereign movement and the corruption movement. And, you know, you were talking earlier about what kind of a country would put sodium fluoride in their water supply. Well, what kind of a country would allow genetically modified foods and all the cell towers that we have and the chemtrails that we have? And the pharmaceutical corporations, that the doctors just seem to have their notepad all ready to go when you walk in.
I think you said 11 times, didn't you say, Dr. Kennedy?
It's pretty terrible, and it's I try to wake people up every single day, and I know you do, and, I had another question for you. Real quick, The Berkey water filter system with the sodium, with the fluoride cartridges, is that a good way of filtering this out? And I also distill it.
Distillation is the most reliable way to remove 100% of the fluoride from the water. And that there are filters. Some of them are made out of activated alumina. Others are made out of bone char. Everybody's got, wants to represent their filter as lasting a certain period of time. That's not true. It lasts for a volume of water. And so, you know, if they say it lasts for 2 years, then you know they're lying. Because they don't have any idea. You can run your swimming pool through it between today and tomorrow, and if it will do one swimming pool, it's shot by tomorrow. What happens to those filters is they deteriorate with volume. And so you may start out with a really nice filter and then run, 100 gallons or 200 gallons through it, and then, it's taking out 97%, and you run another 100 gallons in there, and it's 95%, and so forth and so on. So they deteriorate, and so the only reliable way to get 100% of the elements that are in the water supply out, and that there's lots of stuff in water that you don't want, not just fluoride. You don't want the trihalomethanes, you don't want the chlorine, you don't want the lead, you don't want the arsenic, you don't want the uranium. How do you get all that out? Distill it. And so you're absolutely correct that by distilling your water, you're getting pure water. You're getting water with no gook in it. And that's a good thing. So filters work, but they only work for a period of time, and you need to pay attention to. I tell everybody to buy a filter, buy a tester. A tester's $40. I mean, come on.
I run mine through a filter and then put it through the distiller, because if you take it right from the tap to the distiller, you're scrubbing all of the buildup out of the distiller every single time, where you don't have to do it as often when you filter it first.
Well, that's a good point, because what you're saying is that if you first clean the water and then put it through the distiller, you don't get so much junk out. So for your listeners, Dana, that in one of my videos, it's called Poison Horses, Kathy Justice pulls out three jars. She's a Colorado woman that raises horses, and they're her pets. And that her horses got sick from the tap water in Pagosa Springs, and she figured it out. And and with the help of the veterinarian pathologist from Cornell, Leonard Krug, he's passed away now, but he basically was able to show me even the slides of the bones of these horses. They're severely poisoned. And so they got, how come? They were brood mares. They drink 30 gallons of water a day. But she said her horses would stand out in the cold 40 below zero Colorado mountains and eat snow rather than the heated water.
She
showed the distiller the junk that she got out of the water when she distilled it for her husband and herself, and now she and her dogs, that was just like maybe 4 tablespoons of, cottage cheese with little brown chunks in it. Would you drink that? I don't think so.
And if it happened to her horses, it happens to all the livestock.
It published in the scientific literature. She had published 3 different horses she since identified, because she at shows all the time with her horses and talking to horse people. She's identified several more and helped many other horse owners get rid of what's called colic. She said the most amazing thing was colic will kill a horse. That's where they get the...
Right.
And so the colic went away when they got them off the city water. Just went away. And so other horse owners that were suffering from colic and stuff like that, she pointed out how to get good water for your horse, and has saved many horses a lot of the pain and suffering that hers horses went through. It's insane to put stuff in the water supply. You can't get around it.
Alrighty, Jerry, did you have another question or comment?
No, that was it. Thank you very much for your time. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. All righty. Let's take Wes in Idaho. Wes, welcome.
Hello, Deanna and Dr. David Kennedy. You talked about, spoke about, or know about dentist Weston Price?
Yeah, I used to be on the Price Pottinger Foundation, yes, a very, very the science expert.
I've seen the pictures where when isolated people groups started eating the modern Western diet, that their teeth grew in crooked as well as having tooth decay. Also, a vitamin K2, what's your opinion on that one as well?
Okay. The crooked teeth and fluoride are intimately connected. You can go into in my video, my film called Crippling Waters on my YouTube channel, that the only crooked teeth that we saw in all of the school children that we went to were in the high fluoride villages. The crooked teeth is because Kathy Justin, we're talking about her horse, Leonard Crook explained why this occurs, is that when you swallow fluoride, fluoride accumulates in the bone. It ends up poisoning the bone over time. But when a baby tooth falls out, the permanent tooth is moving upward through bone. And so the certain cells have to dissolve that bone so that the permanent tooth can move upward. Well, what happens is if you expose children to high fluoride, like Chicago water, during their growth and development phase, they end up with substantial levels of fluoride in their bone. And then when that permanent tooth starts to move upward, that fluoride is then liberated from the bone, and it kills the cells that were moving that tooth upward. So they die off. The body says, oh, look, the tooth's not coming in. They got to scuff around, and it comes in on average, you know, between 3 and 6 months too late. And so they end up with teeth that get trapped out. The arch doesn't grow properly, and you end up with an orthodontist on every corner. So when they say, oh, well, fluoridation's really saved, yada, 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 and we've created a whole new industry called cosmetic dentistry, so we can bleach the funny little white spots and make the whole teeth chalky white so that you don't look so funny with white spots on your teeth. That's dental fluorosis. It turns brown if you drink coffee or whatever. And crooked teeth. So we got orthodontists on every corner trying to straighten them out so that the kids can not look goofy when they go to school and the other kids make fun of them.
And vitamin K2? Can you
essential
comment?
For absorbing vitamin D, which is essential for strong teeth and bodies, K2 is good.
K2, I understand it directs calcium to the bones and the teeth, correct?
Yes, and it's also, I believe I'm correct on this, although it wasn't covered in my dental education. It's essential for actually getting the vitamin D to work. You know, you can have high levels of vitamin D, but if you don't have enough K2, then it doesn't work. So
they work together, I guess. Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Wes. All righty, let's take John in California. John, welcome.
Oh, hi, Deanna. Yes, I just turned to your program. I didn't hear the guest name. I heard you talking about water filtration, and I use pearl beads to help, along with a filter, but I'm particularly dealing with pearl beads. I don't know if the guest is familiar with it. As it relates to decontamination or getting rid of fluoride.
What is the product you're using?
Pearl beads. It's magnesium based.
Magnesium would probably attract fluoride. Calcium and fluoride attract to calcium and magnesium, aluminum. The filters that I'm familiar with are bone char and activated alumina, but I don't see any reason why a magnesium filter wouldn't work as well.
Well, this is actually not a filter. I do have a filter, but I also have these little beads inside a glass 1 gallon container, and I pour the water into there and overnight, and this is how I use it.
You know, what I recommend is that you go online and you find a low-cost $40, maybe $50 if you have, you know, to buy the other the standards and so forth. Get a fluoride tester. There are two different kinds. One's about $300 or $400, and that's an ion-specific electrode. The other is a colorimeter, basically. And you got two test tubes. One's got, you know, nothing in it but distilled water, and the other's got a standard. You set the machine up, and then you keep putting other things. It has to be clear. You can't test Coca-Cola and beer with this particular kind of equipment. But if you're doing water, it works just fine. And that's what we used in, you can see me using one in China's battle with crippling water. Is it the colorimeter will do a nice job of measuring the amount of fluoride. So you can see how well your beads work.
Great. Appreciate it very much.
Testing. I'm a great believer in numbers. Give me a number.
All righty. Thank you. excuse me. What would you suggest to people who still have amalgam fillings?
I would urge them to find an accredited IAOMT dentist. And I know I said that too fast for anybody to figure it out, but International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology. I talk about it all the time in my videos. And in my videos, we'll have the logo of the IMT because it's basically where I learned all this stuff. Was it at the 30 years of going to scientific meetings again and again and again, listen to, you know, 20 different experts on the subject. But they can be terribly exposed to mercury during the removal process, and I don't want that. So when I say mercury's bad, it is bad. It's terrible to remove it carelessly, because if you remove it carelessly, you can kill the patient or cripple them for life. And so there are safe ways to take mercury fillings out. And so you can watch one of my YouTube videos called Safer Amalgam Removal, and it tells you how to do it carefully. But the video I made was 1998. When I made the video, I didn't post it till a little later. But anyways, it was today. Everybody present, with the exception of the patient, should be in a spacesuit, and the patient should be covered from head to foot with a plastic drape that gets disposed of as hazardous material, and they should have a separate breathing apparatus that's putting fresh air or oxygen in their nose, and then a flat sheet of rubber over their teeth so that they cannot breathe through their mouth during this procedure. And the tooth is isolated, the filling is cut into two pieces and removed, and with copious amounts of water squirting on it all the time. And that's the only safe way to remove that filling. And so I would tell them to get them out, but get them out carefully. If you can't afford to get them all out, go get a good dentist that's accredited and have them tell you which one is broken or decayed. I've never seen a mouthful of amalgam where every filling was perfect. They're all, the Navy did a study when I was back in the 70s, and that they put fillings in, and then to see if they were leaking, they took them out. And at 2.5 years, 50% of the amalgam fillings were leaking. So if you've got a filling that's been in there 2.5 years, the chances are 50-50 that it's failed. No. Has it fallen out of the hole? No. It's like putting your Chevrolet in the basement. It's not going to fall out of the hole because they make the inside of the hole bigger than the outside. So the filling will never fall out until a lot of the tooth rots away. So if you're waiting for the filling to fall out, you're waiting way too long, because the Chevrolet isn't going to fall out of the basement. You got to look at it carefully, and if it's leaking around the edges, the tooth is turning blue around the edges, take the filling out, and I've found gobs of decay under the fillings that I've removed over the 20 years that I couldn't even see on the x-ray. You know, if I hadn't taken that filling out, that tooth may well have been lost, because x-ray does not show you decay if the filling's in the way.
So, wow.
Anyway.
All righty. Let's take another caller. And this is Jeff from the Chicago suburbs versus Jeff from Chicago. Jeff, welcome.
Hello, Deanna. Welcome. And welcome to your guest. I would like to ask Dr. Kennedy what his opinion of this is. Going on 5 years now, I started making my own toothpaste to get away from the store-bought stuff with the fluoride in it. I use hydrogen peroxide, baking soda, and peppermint oil. And it seems to be working okay, because when I go to my dentist every 4 months for my cleaning, he looks at my mouth and says, "You got like perfect gums." And I was just wondering, because I told him years ago, if I live to be 100, I intend to die with all of my teeth. No root canals and no implants. So he kind of laughed at that. But I think I'm on my way in there, and I would just wonder if you could recommend stuff like that. People make their own toothpaste. I mean, it's virtually free. I mean, the only real cost is the peppermint oil, because the baking soda and the hydrogen peroxide are so cheap. And I just thought I would pass that along and see what your opinion is of that is.
You almost got the ingredients that I had in my book, is the baking soda, peroxide, salt, and and some flavoring ingredient. And you can also add various herbals to it, such as the calendula. But you're doing fine. Even saliva will work. I recommend people use saliva. You know, you carry a toothbrush around in your car, you got a stop sign, you know, take it out and knock the scum off. You know, the scum is what rots your teeth, and that's what your dentist is telling you. Your teeth look great because you don't have any scum on there, because you're making a deliberate effort to keep it off. And you're using, your toothpaste is perfectly fine. It's safer by far than anything you could buy in the store. The only thing I would caution you about is that if you notice that your gums get tender, that you might either cut back on the peroxide. The peroxide's the only one that I've ever had any patients complain about, and we just take it out of the mix. Doesn't make any difference. You know, you can kill germs with 1,000 different things, and you can find them in the kitchen. I always tell people, if you can't find something in the kitchen to brush with, then use saliva. Saliva is non-toxic, and stuff that you're putting in the cookies is non-toxic. If you put fluoride in the cookies, the kids will die. So
yep.
Why would you brush your teeth with a deadly poison? It's insane. Even if it did work, and it doesn't work. They also have other ingredients in toothpaste, sodium lauryl sulfate, which is also known as Tide. It's really good for washing clothes, but it's really bad for gums, because your mouth is going to break out with many more aptostomatitis or herpes lesions because you have used Tide on it, or sodium lauryl sulfate as they cause it. You'll find that in shampoos and various soaps. It's a foaming ingredient, but it takes the scum off your gums, and then you get a herpes outbreak or an infection, aptostomatitis, and it hurts. So if you want to cut down on that, you know, get the sodium lauryl sulfate out of your toothpaste. And, you know, saliva has no sodium lauryl sulfate in it. And the other ingredient, obviously, is the fluoride. And that there's a lethal dose of fluoride in a family-sized tube of toothpaste for a 42-pound person. So what parent would hand a child a lethal dose of arsenic and have them go in and brush and say, be sure and spit out? And they say, oh, well, the child isn't going to use the whole tube. Oh, yeah? I've known children to eat the whole tube of toothpaste quite frequently. It's a problem. The Center for Disease Control identified 10,000 calls a year from children who'd swallowed the toothpaste and become ill. Why is this product on the market?
I've also started to try doing oil pulling on a daily basis in the mornings. Do you have any, it's very difficult because of just the nature of what you're doing. I use organic coconut oil and a little few drops of tea tree oil, which is pretty nasty. I don't like tea tree oil at all. But, I mean, is it what people say it can do for you as far as pulling toxins out of your body and that? Do you have any opinion or observations on that?
The trouble with oil pulling, it works. You can have really nice, healthy gums. The bacteria can't breathe through the oil, so if you get enough on them that they end up suffocating, so that's another way to kill bacteria. It's a pretty nice way. It takes time. It takes about 20 minutes. And so the number of people in my practice that would actually do that was, a handful out of several thousand. So, you know, yes, it works. I don't know about pulling out toxins. Certainly possibly could do that. But I don't have any knowledge. I haven't seen any studies on that. But
okay.
The time-consuming aspect of it, I try to make it simple. Because here's the deal. If you have a toothbrush, and the Bass brush is the one I recommend, it's on my Facebook page and in many of my videos, but it's a very sparsely populated brush. It only has got a few bristles. And so when you push at the gums, it goes way down deep in the gums. Good.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wiggle it. You don't brush. You actually cram in the gums and wiggle. And that stirs everything up. Well, if you stir everything up, then, you know, the scum actually can't hurt you if it's all stirred up and then washed away. So in my book, How to Save Your Teeth, I taught people how to stir the stuff up and then take an irrigator and squirt them away. You know, if you got hit with a tsunami every day when you got up, you probably wouldn't live there. So that's what happens to bacteria. If you knock them loose from the tooth and squirt them away, then they're not going to live in your mouth anymore. So I'm going to move. So move to the drain system, I guess. But that's my short thing is make it real simple so that people will do it. Because the biggest problem is that, you know, that we're busy people. We got to get up. We got to go to work. We got to go here. We got to go there. And so some things like oral hygiene get sort of I think they did a study and they found the average person brushes for 14 seconds.
Holy cow.
That doesn't quite cut it, does it? What if you curled your eyelashes for 14 seconds and fixed your hair for 14 seconds? People will say, well, boy, you had a rough day, didn't you?
Wow. Oh. All righty, we are going to a break.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you so much for calling in. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest tonight is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the producer of he's the producer of Fluoride Gate. He's also produced these other movies, Crippling Waters and Safe Amalgam Removal. And I've posted the links in the website, in the chat room. And you can subscribe to his channel, his YouTube channel. And I noticed that he has quite a lot of subscribers. But anyway, the website is fluoridegate.org. And his Facebook page is /david.kennedy.77701. We're talking about amalgam removal, and I know there's a dentist adjacent community that charges thousands of dollars. I mean, you almost have to take out a loan or something to get the removal taken care of. But I think that, as you said, it can be done one at a time, correct?
I can't comment on their fees because I think it's so dangerous I don't do it. I'm retired, and I've got the medical test to prove that even though I was always careful with mercury, even in dental school and in the Navy and in private practice, I still had a significant burden, and that's because I didn't know I had to be in a spacesuit. So, anyway, I'm fine now, but on the other hand, you're asking somebody to risk their health and his staff and her staff and other people. Infertility, 40% of the dental assistants in Roland study in 1994 were rendered infertile by their occupational exposure to mercury in a dental office. I think that should excite the attorneys, don't you think?
Yes.
You know, but the trouble is how do you prove that person was infertile because of occupational exposure? You don't have to. You basically show that they weren't given adequate protective equipment, and the office wasn't monitored. So that's the bottom line. I'd like to see one dental office. I think like they did in Norway, they basically had a TV special, and they showed that bunches of dental assistants contacted the television station immediately after the special. Said, yeah, we had that happen in our office. I had that with me, etc. And the OSHA people, occupational health and safety people on the specials that were saying, oh, it's not a problem. It's just a little tiny bit. It couldn't possibly cause any problem. And then they subjected it to scientific scrutiny, and they came up with the idea that not only did it cause the problem, but the government was responsible because the government in Norway pays for dental care, and they hadn't required the dental offices to comply with OSHA, and the OSHA people hadn't even understood the risk that the assistants were exposed to. And so they basically, the next time they had the guy on, he says, oh, we didn't know, we weren't aware. Well, whose job is it to tell this, yo?
Yes, exactly.
How come you got a job? You should be unemployed, yo.
Yeah. Now, it's dangerous just to even visit a dental office, even as a patient.
I have patients I had patients that would come to my office and say, oh, I'm glad your office is clean. I get sick in other offices. We didn't have natural gas. We had the heat, but no natural gas in the air. We had hoods over the autoclave and the sterilizing area. We had the exhaust vented to the outside. So we were trying to do it pretty good, but I would do it better today. I would, make sure that we had everybody in a space suit, and we'd set aside a separate operatory and isolate it. You know, it's the same way that you handle radiation. Is that if you look at the film of how you go into a nuclear reactor or something like that, you got to protect the employees. Look at the people at Fujishima Daiichi. You know, they're all walking around with space suits on. That's how all your dentists should look.
Amazing. And and of course it's an occupational hazard for a dentist who is drilling teeth and working every day in the office. I mean, it's just amazing that they don't investigate things. Now I gave my dentist a video about mercury, and I've talked to him about fluoride, and he just kind of tosses it aside. And yet I think that his mental capacity, he doesn't remember things like I've known him for years, since 1985, because we were in Rotary together. But, before I found out about Rotary. But anyway, we were in Rotary together, and, so I've known him a long, long time. And it's just kind of a sad thing.
Well, it happens to every dentist, but when they actually do surveys, and they've got, Vasopushin did a whole series of things, that people with a few mercury fillings test more impaired than people with no mercury fillings. And people with a lot of mercury fillings are more impaired, but the mercury-free dentists are more impaired than somebody with a mouth full of fillings, and the mercury-using dentists are the most impaired. But when you go through and measure blood level of mercury in the dental office, the highest blood level is found in the dental hygienist. Second highest is the dental assistant. And then the dentist is right there up there with the dental assistant. But look at the dental assistant. You know, she's got a new job right out of high school. She gets a DA and then, an RDA. And so she decides to have a kid and goes home, or if she can have a kid. And so how many 70-year-old dental assistants do you know? It's not a job that they can survive in for 50 years. So basically dentistry chews up all the young women in the world and spits them out. After they become impaired or develop some sort of neurological disease, they kick them out and say, I didn't do anything with it. Look at me, I'm standing right here, I'm supposed to be as much as you are. And no, they're not. And the other thing is that most of the dentists are male, most of the women are female, dental assistants are female, and that the female's reproductive system is an extremely complicated system, controlled by a number of different hormones that have to come in at the right time, at the right place, in the right amount, and that what mercury does is it accumulates in what's called the posterior pituitary, which is God thinks so much of the pituitary, it's totally surrounded by bone, it's right smack in the middle of the brain. But it accumulates huge amounts of mercury, and the nucleus basalis of Maynard does too, and that causes a dysfunction in the ovulation reproductive system. There's a wonderful detailed article by a German scientist. It's in German. I have a translation. Gerhard. She took women that were infertile in Germany, measured them. All the women that tested high in mercury, she sent them down to the dental clinic, and they safely removed their mercury fillings. Then she put them on birth control pills so they couldn't get pregnant because she didn't want them pregnant while they were squirting the mercury out. And then 6 months later, she took them off the pill, and they had a 70% success rate in attaining natural spontaneous pregnancy with this program. That the previous record was something like 11%. So it was the most successful program that they'd ever had in obtaining pregnancy in previously infertile women. So one out of five couples in this country are infertile. So one out of five. It's a huge problem. And yet we blame the mother. Blame the woman. she must have not, you know, flossed properly or something. And you know, they put him on hormones and therapy and try to regulate for her what is poisoned in her brain because of the darn mercury fillings in her teeth. You know, it's just, it's the medical solution to a dental problem. Oh, we'll try to make this person work better because their fillings are messing up how their body is supposed to work. I say, get rid of the thing that's messing up how the body's supposed to work.
Sure.
And it definitely should be banned. Other countries have gone mercury-free. Sweden went mercury, started to go mercury-free in, as early as 1987. Germany was mercury-free in the 30s, and then they lost World War II. And so we said, oh, we know mercury's perfectly okay. And then back in 92, they said no mercury fillings for women and children. And then the pro-mercury people fought it back. And in 1994, they had another meeting, and again said women and children are at risk of mercury fillings. Our own Food and Drug Administration says the same thing, and then the president appointed a lady who is on the board of directors of one of the largest companies selling mercury in the United States to be head of the FDA, and said she'd recuse herself. She never recused herself. And they took that paper that said mercury was bad, and they shredded it, and they said mercury is good.
Wow. All righty. Let's take another phone call. Dr. Diane Mayer.
Diane.
Yes.
Hello.
Welcome,
how are you,
doctor.
Good to hear you.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful.
I'll just back up what that gentleman was just saying. I just hopped on because a friend of mine said call in, and so I did. but I had been diagnosed. I'm a more of a holistic type dentist, and I was diagnosed with mercury poisoning from my own occupational exposure back in the year 2000. And so this has been an ongoing struggle with the establishment. But I was most recently solicited to join a class action lawsuit trying to get people that have documented, you know, like medical records to prove that we have been harmed by this substance so that we can once and for all hopefully get it off the market, which would be ideal.
Well, thank you for calling in, and good for you. I mean, you know, it's one
wonderful
thing to be poisoned. There's another thing to fight it.
Yeah, I don't like the word fight, educate, because they're really just ignorant, as I was. I mean, I didn't, you know, knowingly poison people for 8 years on purpose. So, you know, there's a lot of self-forgiveness also when you realize that what you have been doing, what you were taught has, you know, inadvertently harmed people. So, and my uncle was my dentist, so I mean, you know, obviously he was ignorant. He wouldn't have done that on purpose. So I try to come from more of a spirit of they don't know. I do know that there are some people at the top that know, but for most people at the bottom, they just don't know. You know, they're just doing what they're told. So there's an element of forgiveness that has to come in, and I think we can get better results with, you know, you can, what is it? You can get more flies with honey type of thing. You know, putting it out there in a different light rather than the word fight. I don't like that word fight. I think educate is a better way to go about it. And that's what I think this lawsuit is going to be about. It's like, here's the documented proof. Here's the people that were harmed. And, you know, it's not a fight. It's like, here's the evidence. So what are you going to do with that? So it has never been done before, so I'm excited.
It would be nice if the courts worked upon, you know, science and logic, and having seen a few of these things go down, it's quite often a problem to get the courts to come up with reasonable conclusions. But whether you fight or whether you educate, I don't care as long as we get it out of dentistry. And that, and talking to dentists doesn't work, so let's talk to, you know, the public. And thank you for calling in, because that's exactly what you're doing. We're talking to Anna's listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so much for calling in.
One last comment before I leave. A friend of mine worked at one of the most recently instituted dental schools, and he said that they were not teaching the kids how to place amalgam fillings routinely, but that they had to learn how to place them in order for them to pass the board. So who runs the boards, one has to ask themselves. That's a private organization. And if it is private, then shouldn't they be liable personally for any harm? It's just a thought. I'm throwing it out there. And I yield.
Diane, a couple of, you might not be aware, but the dental boards are essentially manipulated by the ADA. The phone number used to be the same for the dental board overview and the ADA, and they changed the switchboard, but they still are housed in the ADA building in Chicago. So, you know,
yeah, but the ADA is private.
ADA is a trade association, and they were sued for mercury fillings in 1992, I think, and then in 1994, they were dismissed from the lawsuit because they argued successfully in the San Francisco court that they owe no duty of care to the public. They're a trade association. They represent industry. They represent the manufacturers and the dental supply companies and the dentists, and that they owe no duty of care to the public. And if that were true, I think they also should not accredit dental schools, because the dental school takes a healthy student and exposes them to enormous levels of mercury. Remember when you were sitting in your sophomore lab and you had a set of plastic teeth and you were to drill a hole in there and then mix mercury with silver powder and stuff it in the hole, and then if you didn't like it, you're supposed to drill it back out and do it again? Was there a respirator? Was there a vacuum? Was there water spray? Was there ventilation? No, 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 no. You could, if you measure that procedure, that's like UCLA. I got UCLA to measure a student doing that procedure on a patient. And they did it accidentally. They would have not done it if they known it was going to happen, but they had trouble covering it up. That everybody present gets exposed to enormous amounts of mercury. That's unacceptable. We don't send our kids to school to get them dosed up with a bunch of toxins. But that's exactly what happened.
Where's OSHA when you need them? Supposedly all these alphabet soup characters that are supposed to be protecting the people. But no, the ADA is a private corporation. Most of them are all private corporations, only masquerading around as public figures. Or in that's what I'm saying, though, that, you know, now knowing what we know, going after them on an individual or private level versus trying to go after them class action type lawsuit.
I wish
you know what I mean? I'm saying man to man.
I wish you the best of luck in your class action, but let me explain something. OSHA will investigate a dental office within 2 weeks from an employee complaining that they're not being given adequate protection. So any dental assistant or dental hygienist listening to this program that hears this information, they can contact me. I can tell you that the law that requires them to give you, the law says when it's reasonable to assume exposure is likely, the employer shall give you informed consent. Adequate protective measures must be taken. The facility must be monitored. Have you ever seen anybody walk around with a monitor? Never.
Folks, we do have to cut to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back, and Dr. Meyer, you're certainly welcome to stay over. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest tonight is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He is the producer of Fluoride Gate. That website is fluoridegate.org. He's also, he has a YouTube channel. He has a Facebook page that is /david.kennedy.77771. And we still have Dr. Meyer also, who has called in. And Dr. Kennedy, you mentioned that that the American Dental Association is really a trade organization. It is a union, and the union is was actually established to protect the dentist, and that is also applicable to the FDA. They are designed, they were designed to protect the industry and not the consumer or the patient. Your comments?
The ADA, by their own admission, is a trade association, but look at their statement. We represent the dentists, the manufacturers, and the basically the salesmen. How can you do that? I mean, if you were representing the automobile manufacturer, would you also say the National Transportation and Safety Board should be part of the people you represent? No, you've got conflicts of interest, because how do you represent the people selling stuff as well as the people buying stuff? And that's the problem. And so, and they make tons of money doing that. They get, it's like every tube of toothpaste has the ADA seal of approval. That's how they make their money. And so, I'm looking forward to some of the people that are talking this evening with us getting a hold of me or their local occupational health and safety, and explain that they're not being protected in their job at their dental office, and that they understand that they're handling mercury every day, and is that okay? And that, you know, they'll jump out of their skin. We measured it. The guy, the industrial hygienist that measured it, said he'd never seen such high levels. And he measures factories and plants. He said never seen such high levels as occurs routinely in dental offices. So
wow.
don't measure, don't notice.
Yeah, I guess that's how you do it. You just ignore it, right?
And you mentioned the FDA seems to represent somebody besides the people they're supposed to. Every member of the board is also a member of the American Dental Association. People on administering the exams are also members of the American Dental Association. So we have a big evil in this equation. And
sure,
that big evil is a trade association that refuses to pay attention to science while paying gobs of lip service. The National Institute of Dental Cranial Facial Research paid for a horribly unethical study of orphans where they put mercury fillings in. And now even some of the lead authors on that study have come out with their own publication showing that it damaged the kidneys and the intellect of the children in the study. That is unethical. You cannot do a prospective study with a deadly poison and a neurotoxin on children. I'm sorry, I don't care if you're in Portugal or New England. It's unethical. And what they should do, and they are required by law to do, is go back and take those fillings out safely and heal those children if we still can. They're refusing to do that, by the way.
Indeed.
Oh, no. They even fudged the documents and changed them in the Portuguese to say that it wasn't their responsibility. It's the orphan's responsibility.
We have run out of time. Thank you so very much, Dr. Kennedy. And thank you, callers. And thank you, Dr. Meyer, for calling in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bless your hearts, both of you, for doing what you're doing. Thank you. Thank you for educating us.
Doing my best.
That's what we need. All righty, take care. We need to do this again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you tomorrow.